Blog Talk Radio.
And all access is all inclusive.
Back at it again. Can't stop, won't stop. It's another edition of the NFL Draft Bible Draft Digest weekly show where we count you down to the 2014 NFL Draft. Supposedly 338 days away, but we'll get back to that in a second. Of course, I am your host, Rick Saratella. I'm joined by the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. We welcome him into the show. How you doing today, Ralph?
Oh, yeah. I like this kind of party.
Yeah, I mean, we just got wrapped up with the 2013 NFL Draft, but of course, we've already turned the page and looking ahead to 2014. Now, Reverend, the big news coming down the wire today, a story we've been on top of for quite some time. The NFL appears that they're going to make the shift now, push the NFL calendar back. NFL draft supposedly going to be broadcast, aired, and taking place in May now. And I think the next step is to move the NFL scouting combine back so that we can do the regional combines before the combine in Indianapolis and an American Idol style type of elimination process with the regional combines. Those who excel in the regional combines advancing to the NFL scouting combine. And I assume that will eventually be pushed back later in the NFL calendar year. And who knows, maybe the Super Bowl gets pushed back to a later date as well. But I mean, what's your take, Ralph, just in a general point of view in terms of having the NFL draft back, pushed back maybe a whole another month and creating this whole additional month of us to critique and analyze these prospects for an additional month? What's your initial thoughts?
Well, you know, I don't think it's necessary, but I know what the NFL is thinking here. I mean, during the course of a 12-month year, usually the dead months for football are May and June, and then things start picking up in July with training camps. So what they want to do is they want to, I guess, kind of like really shorten that dead period. That way people just keep on talking about football basically for 12 months a year, and really they don't want a break there. They want football to be front and center all year long, all year strong, and that's what they're thinking.
Now, you know, we tweeted this information out earlier in the day, and, you know, I got a lot of negative feedback, Ralph, in terms from the fan perspective that they really don't want to wait another month for the whole process to unfold and unwind. And, you know, can you differentiate between the two in terms of covering the NFL draft? Obviously, it makes us more relevant for a longer period of time. But from a fan perspective, do you think that the NFL fans are going to embrace a move like this?
Well, maybe your typical fan or your typical Jets fan that just is really concerned with what the Jets do, for instance, I don't think that particular person maybe wants to wait. You know, they want to see, they're anxious, they want to see who the next quarterback is going to be, who the next pass rusher is going to be coming out of the draft, and they're really anxious about it. You know, but for people like me, people like you that cover the NFL and college football all year round, I don't think it really makes a big difference. I mean, we're going to talk football anyway, whether it's May, June, July, or August.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And here we are in May talking about the 2014 NFL draft. We've got a jam-packed show lined up ready for you to rock and roll. I'm all juiced up, Rev, on that purple drink. And, you know, we're going to be joined by Tabor Small later in the show, breaking it down. He's been doing some stuff for the NationalUnderclassmen.com, breaking down some quarterbacks. We're going to talk to him about that. And, of course, we're digging in the crates, going diamond hunting. You know, diamonds in the rough, so to speak. The Reverend Ralph Mancini is going to break it down for us. It's an offensive edition. NFL prospects for the 2014 NFL draft that could emerge as potential top draft picks. So we're going to break that all down for you in a second. But first, let me tell you about a couple of our sponsors, MyFantasyLeague.com. If you're not a member or you're not hosting your fantasy football league on MyFantasyLeague.com, then you're making a huge mistake. It's a service I've been using for over a decade. Of course, the Reverend and I host our Dynasty League on MyFantasyLeague.com. And, you know, if you've been using other websites to host your fantasy football league. You can import all that historical data, past champions, and all that good stuff at MyFantasyLeague.com. So check them out. Of course, the NFLDraftBible.com, if you're not aware, has migrated over to the FanVersusFan.com network. So check out our new look over at NFLDraftBible.com. We're going to be posting a lot of free content and video debates and things of that nature. So we're excited about that. And, of course, our third email subscriber blast, you know, email blast to our insider subscribers went out today, breaking down the post-draft recap. The Reverend here and myself and Joe Everett have been doing the post-draft recap analysis for every selection, every team. And, of course, we're giving you the rookie fantasy football impact and analysis. Of course, Fantasy Football Insiders airs every Sunday morning during the NFL season. And for those of you who have been listening to the show throughout the years, of course, you know I'm a local New Jersey guy. And I'm excited about our new local sponsor, Trattoria Rustica in Montclair, New Jersey, Italian restaurant on Bloomfield Avenue, 519 Bloomfield Avenue. Authentic Italian cuisine. And, you know, we're doing a special here for those of you in the New Jersey area. Go down to Trattoria Rustica on Bloomfield Avenue in Montclair. Tell them Rick sent you, and you get 15% off of your check, which is a very nice deal. And I'm down there frequently, so you might run into me. And, you know, like I said, go to Trattoria Rustica, Bloomfield Avenue in Montclair. Tell them Rick sent you and get 15% off of your bill. Now, time to talk NFL draft with the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. Of course, I'm your host, Rick Saratella, and we'll have Tabor Small later on in the show. But, Ralph, I know you've been digging in the crates for some diamonds in the rough, and that's what we're going to do here today on the Diamond Hunter Series Offensive Edition. And because we spent so much time on the quarterbacks last show, why don't we start with the big uglies? We'll start up front with the offensive linemen. We'll work inside out. And start off at the center position with the prospect Gabe Icard, a four-year starter. And, you know, we saw Barrett Jones this time a year ago. Ralph was looking like a potential first-round pick. He slid all the way down to the third or fourth round. And these center prospects are sometimes hard to gauge. But Icard is a four-year starter, a guy that's proven, and a guy that I know you like. So what do you see his prospectus heading into the season?
Yeah, well, usually, you know, when you're looking at centers, they tend to be not as big as the guards or the tackles, for that matter. And Gabe Icard, he is your classic technician. I mean, he's quick. He's got good feet. He establishes a strong base. And he's one of these converted tight ends. He's about 295 pounds. And he's played both at guard and at center. But I think at the next level, he projects better at the center position. And really, he can do everything that's expected from a center, including reading blitzes, pulling out assignments, and making blind snaps out of the shotgun formation. Now, you know, he's not one of these road graders at 295 pounds. He's more of a quick blocker who is very technically sound. So Gabe Icard, I see him as probably like a mid-round type of player who definitely has the tools to be a successful center at the next level.
And, you know, we've seen a lot of these hybrid interior linemen in the past years, Ralph. I mean, you talk about Travis Frederick this past year, played guard, projects as a center. Rodney Hudson, same type of deal. You know, what do you think his versatility this year? I mean, he might need to be playing guard this season. So what if he winds up playing guard this season? Do you still project him as a center at the next level?
Right now, if I had to draft him right now at 295 pounds, give or take, I think in the NFL where you have bigger and stronger players playing from week to week, I would rather have him at the center position. I'm not saying that, you know, he can't do the job as a guard. He's just not one of these types of guys that buries people in the running game. You know, he's more of a, as I said, more of a quick guy, more of a health blocker, a technician. So to me, I think he looks more like a center in the NFL than he does as a guard. Not to say that he can't be a good guard, but I think he'd be a better center.
All right, keeping it on the interior, you know, LSU has had a strong reputation for producing quality offensive linemen, but not in recent years. The quality of offensive linemen they've been producing at LSU in recent years hasn't been up to par with their reputation. But there's a player down there by the name of Josh Williford that I know you're high on.
Yeah, he's a personal favorite of mine. Maybe a lot of people haven't heard a lot said about him this past year because he did miss some time due to injury. But you're taking a look at a guy who is extremely tall for a guard at 6'7" for his position. But he does have the girth that you want at 332 pounds. And this guy, he can get out and pull in the running game. He can hit moving targets. You know, as I said, he only played in like six games this past season, but he always performed every time he played, every time he suited up. And, you know, I know that he has worked on slimming down, and I can see his draft stock increase, you know, with better nimbleness and pass protection. And that's where he has a little bit of a limitation in pass protection. He's a much better run blocker than he is a pass blocker. But I think that, you know, if he does stay healthy and he plays, 90% or 100% of his games this upcoming season, I can definitely see him as another one of those mid-round to late-round guys who could, you know, be an eventual starter in the NFL.
All right, from Oklahoma to LSU, now up to Ohio State, Jack Nehart, a guy up in Ohio State, has been praised big time by Coach Urban Meyer, a guy that they're counting on to kind of be a team leader this year, Ralph. And I know John Simon kind of carried that torch this past season, but Newhart is a guy that is kind of a leader inside the locker room. What kind of player can you tell us about on the field with his physical attributes?
Yeah, well, Newhart, I think he did a pretty nice job of taking over for Mike Adams at the left tackle position. He's another one of these players who is a superior run blocker. He not only manhandles opponents, but he's intelligent in terms of recognizing fronts since he did play center in high school. And, you know, overall, you're looking at somebody who's tough, he's selfless, he's a real grinder in the film room. To me, he projects as more of a right tackle at the next level. But, you know, nowadays, you know, the way they play football, you know, you need a good right tackle and you need a good guard. And it's not just all about the left tackle anymore because with these blitzes that defenses throw you in the NFL, they're coming at you from all different directions. So I think that Newhart, he could be a terrific right tackle at the next level.
All right, very good. Keeping it moving, keeping it rolling with the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. I am your host, Rick Saratella, here on the NFL's Rev Bible Draft Digest Weekly. And if you want to keep up to date with our broadcast schedule, check us out on Blog Talk Radio at All Access Football. Of course, we've got some good videos going on our YouTube site as well. So All Access Football, NFLDraftBible.com in full effect. But keeping it with the big uglies, Ralph, one of the most well-respected offensive line coaches in college football is Rick Trickett from Florida State University. I know he has a lot of high praise when it comes to Cameron Irving. In fact, I think I saw somewhere where I read where he said he might be the best offensive lineman prospect to ever come out of Florida State University. So what's your take on Cameron Irving?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. As you said, Rick Trickett is one of the best in the business, and he did a fabulous job. He's done a fabulous job so far in converting Cameron Irving into an offensive tackle. Irving, let's remember, you know, he used to play defensive tackle, and, you know, last year was his first year playing on the offensive line. So he did have his share of growing pains. But he did improve as the season wore on. He has quick feet to get out in space, and he can handle those speed rushers. He has the long arms to make a successful transition to the offensive line. And, you know, the other advantage that he gives you is, since he does have that experience on the other side of the ball, you know, he does know a defensive lineman's tricks of the trade firsthand. So, I mean, if you're talking about size, athletic ability, and just the overall knowledge of defensive linemen and the pass rush moves and all of that sort, all of those things, I think Cameron Irving is certainly a guy with some big-time potential. I mean, right now, you would say he's maybe more of a mid-round type of player, but since he's still learning the position, there's no telling, you know, how high that draft stock could rise as the season wears on.
Yeah, you mentioned that scary word thrown around amongst NFL scouts. They cringe when they hear that word potential. And you talk about his raw skills, you know, limited experience on the offensive line, kind of similar. Maybe a different circumstance, but kind of similar to a Menelik Watson, like we saw this past year, who went pretty high in the draft, raw skilled offensive lineman from FSU. I mean, in this stage of the game, Ralph, where do you have Irving compared to Watson in terms of an NFL draft prospect?
Well, I actually think that Watson is probably even more raw than Irving. Watson is a foreign player from jolly old England. And, you know, he is really somebody that sometimes he looked like he was guessing out there. And he really looked like a neophyte at times when he was playing. Whereas Cameron Irving, I think, has a better knowledge of football in general. And so I think with another year under his belt, I don't think, you know, Irving is going to be maybe quite as raw as Menelik Watson is this year as he enters the NFL.
All right. You've been listening to the Draft Digest weekly show with your host, Rick Saratella, and the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. You just heard our Diamond Hunters for the offensive linemen. Ralph breaking it down for the big uglies up front, taking a look ahead at the 2014 NFL Draft. After our next guest that I'm excited to have on, he's going to break down our Diamond Hunters for the skill position. So make sure you stay tuned. Keep it locked. We're going to be breaking down quarterback, running backs, wide receivers as Ralph digs in the crates and brings us some players you need to know for the upcoming 2014 NFL Draft. And it's time now to welcome on our guest of the evening, somebody I've been following for many, many years, one of the favorite people I like to follow on Twitter as well. He is Tabor Small, Texas First Nation consultant, nationalunderclassmen.com contributor, of course, HBCU Classic roster assembler. And we welcome him on to the show right now on the NFLDraftBible.com hotline. How you doing today, Tabor?
Oh, I'm doing pretty great. I really appreciate you guys having me on, and I'm looking forward to, you know, talking some football.
Yeah, I mean, it's NFL Draft time here at the NFL Draft Bible, even though we just got done with the 2013 NFL Draft, 2014, right around the corner. As you know, someone who follows the draft year-round, there's no days off. So the big news before we delve into some of the things you're doing, the big news today, NFL draft may be pushed back to the month of May. NFL considering, you know, pushing back the NFL scouting combine and maybe even the Super Bowl. What was your initial reaction, Tabor, when you heard that news?
Well, I was a little surprised, but a lot of people kind of heard over the last few weeks that there's something like this was going to come about. We just wasn't sure when they were going to release the news, but they've been kind of having meetings over the last, you know, few weeks about kind of changing and pushing back the schedule. Because if you look at the Super Bowl with it being, you know, a little bit later than it's been in the past couple of years, you look at the Baltimore Ravens, as soon as the Senior Bowl ended and also even for the 49ers, they pretty much was kind of behind the eight ball compared to other teams as far as preparing for the draft, preparing for the combine. And they really were kind of really trying to catch up. So by them really pushing a lot of things back, I think it gives everybody kind of on the same, you know, playing field once you get done with the season, and also with the college football season. The college football season, usually the national championship game was right after New Year's or a couple of days after New Year's. Now it's January 10th and 12th now. So I think it's a smart move to really push it maybe about 2 weeks later, because even that 2 weeks will make a big difference and give a lot of the teams to really be able to catch up, you know, once the season ends, once you kind of get through the Super Bowl, once you kind of, and it gives you a lot of time to get opportunity to get prepared for the combine and also for the draft. So I think that this is a real good choice. I'm not sure if everything is finalized yet, because I know the NFL has been pushing for it, but I think the NFLPA have to agree to it for this to kind of be official and finalized. But I think it's a smart move, and it'll be something that will be a great, you know, asset for the NFL and also for a lot of the teams. So once you make it to the Super Bowl, then you're not really put in that kind of position once your season ends that you're kind of behind.
Yeah, and I think one of the, you know, under the radar aspects of the whole situation is, too, you know, with this whole NFL draft being pushed backwards, the Canadian Football League is probably going to have their draft before the NFL. So I think that could impact some of these Canadian players as well, because, you know, we can see, we can take a look and see, you know, with the CFL draft being now before the NFL draft, I think it adds a little bit of intrigue and mystery. But, you know, we got Tabor Small on the hotline joining the good Reverend Ralph Mancini and Rick Saratella here on the NFL Draft Bible Draft Digest. And you can catch Tabor Small on nationalunderclassmen.com, where he's begun to release his quarterback previews. And, you know, let's kick it off in the ACC, which was the first quarterback preview I came across, Tabor, and a guy that I know Ralph here is very high on. Let's start it off with Brian Renner at UNC, a guy that you mentioned in your recent article.
I really like Brian Renner because he's a real good quality quarterback. He doesn't get the headlines as Taj Boyd or Logan Thomas, or even Stephen Morris from the University of Miami, but if you look at his numbers, he was very efficient. He threw for 67% completion percentage. The only thing, he doesn't have the strongest arm compared to the other quarterbacks, but he has a stronger up and arm. I think he really sees the football field. He's very efficient. He gets the, you know, the ball out of his hands. He has real good footwork. He's a little undersized. He's not very tall. I think he's about 6'1", 6'2", about 220 pounds. So, he's, you know, he has a good enough size. But I really like his ability at the quarterback position. I think he's a real good quality quarterback. And he's someone that I think really can buy, once you get around the second, maybe third round, but I think he's someone that can really, once you get around the second round, can bring good value to a team and really can end up being a starter for an NFL team.
Yeah, and I know, Ralph, you're high on Renner as well. Anything you want to follow up there?
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, watching him, you know, he's the type of player, he starts off slow at times, he needs to get into a rhythm, but once he gets warmed up, you know, he is a guy that is in total command, and, you know, obviously he's a very smart quarterback, he can readjust his throws if he sees something, has the ability to hit receivers in stride. What he really has to polish up on is sometimes he's a bit careless. But I do think he does have an NFL arm, and so and he does have the intangibles, the leadership, and the intelligence to make it in the NFL. I'm very excited about Brian Renner's upside.
All right, and we're joined here by Tabor Small here on the Draft Digest Weekly Show, and you know, ACC Tabor, you know, produced some top draft picks this past year. You take a look at EJ Manuel. First quarterback selected in the NFL draft in 2013. Mike Glennon, of course, making some waves down in Tampa Bay. So ACC putting out some quality quarterbacks, and I'm looking here at the top of your rankings, Taj Boyd from Clemson and Logan Thomas from Virginia Tech. What do they bring to the table?
Well, both of those guys bring a lot to the table. When you look at Taj Boyd, he's someone that's just a winner. He's been able to really improve his game over the last couple of years. He's someone that really relied on his physical talents early on, but I think when he really got a chance to really sit down and become more of a student of the game, he really allowed the game come to him. He really is someone that took his game to the next level, especially last year. I mean, he counted for 46 touchdowns. I like to see him cut down on his interceptions, but someone like Taj Boyd, he has to improve his decision-making. He has to improve his footwork. And he also has to cut down on his turnovers. He was someone that holds on to the ball too much. He's someone that really got to make a lot more better decisions in the pocket. But what he brings, he's a dynamic quarterback. He's a smart quarterback. He gets the ball out. He gets everyone involved in the offense. And he's someone that, like I said earlier, is just a real good proven winner. But he's someone that, you know, scouts definitely like to see him really become a lot more consistent. He also has some inconsistencies in his game. Sometimes he can get a little flustered, you know, in the pocket. But overall, they really like his chance at the next level. But he's also undersized. They got him at 6'1". I think he's a shade over 6 feet. So when you look at someone like him, but also when you have someone like Russell Wilson, who's been able to be successful 5'10 as a quarterback, is not as much of a concern as it was in the past couple of years. But in the end of the day, they love the quarterbacks that are 6'4", 6'5". Now, when you get to Logan Thomas, he possesses all the size and the arm strength and everything you look for in a quarterback. He's 6'5", he's 250 pounds, but he really didn't play up to high expectations that everyone was hoping that he would come to play last year. As a sophomore, I think he completed about almost close to 60% of his passes. He had more touchdowns than interceptions, and you saw that he had a lot of upside and promise, but last year, he really downplayed. He really regressed as a quarterback. He has a lot of inconsistencies to his game. I think he needs a lot more improvement to his game. His decision-making wasn't very well. His footwork was sloppy at times, and he tried to do too much. That's one of the things that, you know, I think that really, really hurt his game, that he tried to do a lot of things in pressured situations. So I really like Logan Thomas. A lot of teams really believe that he's someone that can be still even a first-rounder, even though they like to see him show a lot more skills at the quarterback position, show a lot more intangibles, and also make better decisions with the ball in his hands. But he's someone that they, if he has more improved senior year, really improve his accuracy, really see the field a lot better, he's someone that really can ascend back up. Because right now I have him like as a middle-round prospect. But right now I think that if he has, like I said, a more improved year, he's someone that can really rise up the board. But looking at Taj Boyd and Logan Thomas and also Stephen Morris, the quarterback from the University of Miami, Stephen Morris is someone that really came on towards the middle and the end of last year. I think early in the year he got off to a rocky start. But once he pretty much settled down and really let his game come to him and really, really, you know, made more smart decisions with the football in his hands, really went through his reads, went through his pre-snap reads, he's someone that really kind of extended himself. And another thing I like about Stephen Morris is that he has a very strong arm. To me, I think he probably has one of the top two strongest arms in the draft going into next year. He's also a little undersized. Also, I think he's about, not undersized, but he's about 6'1", 6'1 and a half, so he's tall enough. But I really like Stephen Morris, you know, as far as his prospect for the next level. But the ACC, to me, has a lot more depth at quarterback than you look at last year. Last year, E.J. Manuel who came out and also Mike Glennon. And both of those guys definitely, you know, throughout their career, they had some good games, but they also had some bad games. But you also look at E.J. Manuel, he got drafted pretty high with, you know, the Buffalo Bills, who saw some things in him and also liked what they saw going into the Senior Bowl. So, but if you look at this year's class that's coming out for next year's, it's definitely a lot more depth for us quarterback when you look at last year's with E.J. Manuel, also Mike Glennon.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And we're talking to Tabor Small here on the Draft Digest Weekly Show with your hosts Rick Ferratella, Ralph Mancini. Transitioning over to the SEC, Tabor, I know you published an article today on nationalunderclassmen.com previewing the quarterbacks in the SEC. Ralph, you have any questions for Tabor in terms of SEC quarterback prospects? I mean, there's a handful of guys. Of course, the SEC keeps putting out NFL prospects. And the occasional quarterback, there's a couple of prospects in this upcoming 2014 NFL draft. Any guys that you're eyeing there for Tabor?
Sure. You know, there's one quarterback, Zach Mettenberger, plays for LSU. You know, physically, he's got everything that you want, also in terms of intangibles. But yet you watch him play, and he leaves you wanting more. He has the big arm, but can he put it all together in 2013? He does have four receivers returning from last year. He has a new offensive coordinator in Cam Cameron. So what do you see or what do you expect out of Zach Mettenberger in 2013?
What I would hope out of Zach is what a lot of scouts are hoping to see. They really see him play more consistent. Last year, he definitely had an inconsistent season. He started off real rocky, and then he had a stretches, I think, for three straight games where he played well, and then in the bowl game, he played very bad. So he really kind of have a lot of mixed reviews from scouts. You also look at it, he's a transfer. He transferred from University of Georgia, if I'm correct, where he got into an incident there, and then he transferred to LSU. And whenever you have any, you know, off the field, they'll always, you know, raise a lot of questions to scouts. But when you look at his ability, I mean, he has the perfect size. I think he's 6'5", 240 pounds, has a rocket arm, but he doesn't make good decisions with the football. One of the things that I definitely like to see him do is really improve his footwork, improve his accuracy, improve his, you know, also I think he has also has a funky release. It's not real funky, but it's not like a quick release. So he has like an elongated release as well with his strong arm. But someone like Zach, I think if he really puts it all together this year, he really would send up the draft. I think some scouts have him as a middle to late round pick. But he's someone that really has become a lot more consistent, you know, in his game and really play well in the big games. LSU is a big program. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of receivers that are coming back. He has running backs that are coming back. He has a lot of pieces around him for next year to really, you know, really do a lot of things for the program but also for himself. So he's someone that I really is keeping my eye on, especially when he played well during those three or four games last year against real good competition where he really showed what he can do, but he also kind of reverted back to some of the bad things that he brings to the table once you saw in a bowl game. So that's something that when you look at next year, you want to see what type of quarterback that you're getting. Are you getting the one that kind of made some mistakes and kind of get down on himself and show a lot of inconsistencies? Or are you going to get a quarterback that show a lot of upside, that could bring a lot to the table, and also some things that you know that can be corrected? So there's certain things with some quarterbacks that, like you look at Tim Tebow when he was coming out, there's certain things people try to correct, but there were certain things that he's a quarterback or not. There's certain things you just are not going to correct. There's certain things he is what he is. So when you look at somebody like Zach, you wonder what type of quarterback you're getting because he shows a lot of inconsistencies to this game. And he also reminds me a lot of Logan Thomas. Now, I think Logan Thomas has a little bit more upside because he's a little bit more mobile, and he put together a better season as a sophomore. But if you look at Zach, he hasn't really been that productive consistently over his career while he's been at LSU, and he's been able to have a lot of good talent around him. If you look at A.J. McCarron, who also has a lot of good talent around him at Alabama, but he's very efficient. A.J. McCarron, he's a quarterback that just gets it. He has real good footwork. He has a real good release. He has a strong arm. He can make all the throws. He doesn't have the strongest of the arm. I don't think he has great accuracy downfield, but he has good enough accuracy when he throws the ball downfield. If you look at A.J. McCarron, he's a game manager. They let him manage the game. He didn't throw downfield too much, so a lot of scouts like to see him throw downfield to see if he consistently gets the ball out there, throw out to the hashes, throw out to the numbers. But you look at someone like, you know, A.J. McCarron, who has all the size and the tools, and he's been able to officially run the Alabama offense. To me, he's a quarterback that can be a face of a franchise because he's been able to deal with the pressures of being a quarterback at Alabama and also playing for someone like Nick Saban. He's someone that has real good footwork. He's someone that, okay, if he goes through his reads and progresses, no one is open, he'll dump it down to the running back. He doesn't try to do too much. And also, he's only thrown for 8 interceptions in 2 seasons. I think he only threw for 3 interceptions last year, and that came just in 1 game. So if you look at A.J. McCarron, he doesn't get as much publicity as you think as a lot of quarterbacks should at his position. Now, he's able to get a good amount last year at the national championship game because it was him.
Well, he's getting some publicity from Darnell Dockett, I think, is giving him some publicity. Wasn't Darnell Dockett hitting on his girlfriend?
Yeah, he was. He was shooting his girlfriend and everything. But I really like his game because he just has all the talent. He's got all the leadership skills. He's someone that really put his team in position to be successful and making good plays. When you're a quarterback, you go up to the line, you really have to read the defense and see what they give you. So he's someone that make the pre-snap reads and can change one play into another play. And he's also someone, like I said, he really gets a lot of people involved. But one of the things that scouts have a little thing against him is that they run the ball a lot as well. So they wonder if he's someone that can take the game over, because that's what you look for in a quarterback, someone that can, you know, at the end of the game when you got to come back, sometimes you can't run the football. You have to pass to get back into a game. So that's one of the things, since he hasn't really played behind too much, they have questions to see if he's someone that can really take over a game and really be able to, you know, pass the ball a good amount to be successful. But I really like A.J. McCarron. He's someone that people have him in the first, second round. I have him as a bona fide first-round quarterback, because whenever you can play in that type of offense, and really be efficient and make smart decisions, and you're playing in the SEC as well, if this is what you want. Sometimes we get so in love with the big arm and all the physical tools, which are great, but you want someone like Tom Brady who has pocket presence. That's what McCarron has. You want someone that has real good pocket presence, someone that keeps their head down the field when they throw the football. They're not flustered, you know, under the pressure. And A.J. McCarron has been able to show that because he's been able to bring the team back in a couple of games when they almost lost. Now, they lost to Texas A&M last year with Johnny Manziel, but you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. But he's someone that consistently is a very efficient quarterback, is a very smart quarterback, and he has the tools that you look for to have someone that you can build around at the next level because, you know, we all know the NFL is turning into a passing league, and every turn it's turned into a passing league. So you need someone that's very smart, that's very efficient, that can go through his progression three and four reads, that takes what the defense gives him, and that's what you kind of look for, and that's why I'm very high on A.J. McCarron.
Hey, Tabor, you know, I just wanted to ask you about one more guy in the SEC. You know, I know that people tend to throw that term around a lot with quarterbacks. He can make all the throws. You know, sometimes I think, you know, that's used a little bit too loosely. But, you know, one quarterback who I think really can make all the throws is Tyler Russell out of Mississippi State. I mean, I know he has his bouts with inconsistency, sometimes tries to force the issue a little bit too much. But I look at this quarterback, and to me, he has pro-level skills.
Yeah.
He has the big arm to make all the throws. He's got that solid over-the-top delivery, which I love, and he could throw it with touch as well. He's a very good play-action quarterback, and I just wanted to get your opinion on him. Now, I know that he doesn't play with a very good team, and I think he lost all his receivers from last year. So he does have some challenges up ahead in 2013. But when you look at Tyler Russell, what kind of quarterback or what kind of upside do you see with him?
I believe Tyler Wilson has some real good upside at quarterback position. If you look at his game last year, I think he started off with like 15 touchdowns. He started off very well in the first couple of games, and then his last couple of games, he threw for 9 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. He didn't play well towards the middle, and he didn't play well towards the end of the year. And the thing that kind of showed me is that once he got into SEC play, he didn't really elevate his game because, you know, a lot of the SEC teams, a lot of teams really schedule a lot of soft conference teams early in the season. But once he got into conference play, he was very inconsistent. But Tyler Wilson is someone who's 6'4". I mean, a legitimate 6'4". Tyler Russell is someone that's legitimate 6'4", 225 pounds. So he has the size. He has a very strong arm. He's someone that needs to improve his footwork as well because a lot of times he doesn't step into his throws. The fact that he has a strong arm, he throws off his back foot a lot. He doesn't really, like I said, really step into his throws. And also, he doesn't go through his progressions as you would like sometimes. And sometimes he also stare down receivers. That's why that led to a lot of interceptions. He held on to the ball too a little much. He was very consistent once you got towards the conference play, towards the middle and the end of the year. But he also still showed a lot of upside that a lot of teams look for. I think he is a smart quarterback. I really believe once he's on his game, when you look at early in the year, he can be very accurate. But one of the things that, you know, like I said, teams really would like to see him improve on is just really the accuracy, seeing the passing windows as they anticipate and also develop, and also just the intangibles, the leadership skills. Those are some of the things that they really want to see him improve as well because he was, as you know, he got on towards the course of the season, that was something that really was lacking when you look at the Mississippi State offense. Now, he doesn't have as much talent around him, but still, they still want you to be, you know, productive, you know, once you kind of get into the season. So, but I really like Tyler Wilson. I think he has real good, you know, a chance and prospectus for the next level. But he just definitely needs some more consistency to his game, and he really needs to get into an offense. And I think somebody like him really works well like in a West Coast type offense that can throw down vertical and down the seams, can dump it off to run it back. So I think for someone like somebody like Tyler Russell, he's really going to need to really get into a good offense and really give a chance to be successful at the next level.
Wilson, Russell, you know, it's easy to mix up, but, you know, both top prospect. I think Russell on a similar, par for the course, Tyler Wilson, a potential NFL draft prospect for the upcoming 2014 NFL draft. And we've been talking to Tabor Small, doing a wonderful job for us here, breaking down the quarterbacks in the ACC and SEC. You can find out more about those quarterbacks at nationalunderclassmen.com, where he's a contributing writer. And, of course, you do a lot of work with the Texas First Nation game as a consultant. So, Tabor, before we let you go, give us a rundown where we can find you. Where's the best way to find your latest content and some of the things you got coming up for us here on the nationalunderclassmen.com and anything else, percolating in the waters?
Oh, sure. People can reach me on my Twitter, right at tabersmall.com. That's TABERSMALL, where I pretty much tweet, a lot of releases. And also my information is also on nationalunderclassmen.com. National Underclassmen does a, great job of really helping out high school recruits, just getting exposure to the college level. And a lot of these guys, such as Taj Boyd and Johnny Manziel, has gone on to be great, college prospects. So, I've really got a great opportunity to really do a lot of reports on guys that, everyone feels that are prospects, for next year. So a lot of my information is right there on social media. It's also, like I said, on nationalunderclassmen.com. People also can, find me, on Facebook. So I definitely, appreciate you guys, having me on. It's been great. It's definitely been fun. And definitely, looking forward to, really continue to, to be involved. And also for next year, I'm still, involved with the Texas Versus Nation. And, we definitely look at putting the watch list together and taking a look at some guys that, people are excited to take a look at for next year.
Yeah, and that, two quick hitters before I let you go. And we'd love to have you on the show again. That you mentioned the Texas Versus Nation game and you're a consultant there in terms of, putting together the roster and scouting players. One, how early, when do you guys start putting together that watch list for the Texas Versus Nation game? And two, I know your history with the HBCU Classic. Give our listening audience an update. Is there going to be a game this year, or what's the latest status with the HBCU Classic game?
Well, with the Texas Versus Nation, we kind of start in June. What happened is, the Nationals and Bledsoe, they get together and they pretty much put together a list of prospects, and that information start going out in June, so we really kind of go off of that. But we also start communicating with schools and see who they have as prospects. We also kind of go over what we've watched over as film, and we start putting together a watch list over the summer, and then the watch list by end of August starts getting released by August, early September, guys that we're pretty much, looking at and considering for the event. And what I pretty much do, I kind of look at a lot of guys here on the East Coast and also on the SEC, guys that we consider that are prospects. So I really, enjoy being able to do that, just evaluate a lot of talent and put together reports. And also as far as the HBCU game, most people know I was the director, player, person of that for three straight years. Was able to assemble a good amount of rosters for those consecutive years, where a lot of guys was able to get a lot of exposure and talent, for the next level, where a lot of those guys are still on rosters right now. Unfortunately, it wasn't a game, last year. It's been a changeover as far as, ownership, and we still, the people that were, running it, we still in talks about maybe, possibly bringing a game back for this year. Because you can see after this year's draft, this past year's draft, there weren't too many guys from those schools that really got a chance or signed anywhere. But when we did the game for three straight years, I mean, you had about 40 to 45 guys, 50 guys really that got opportunity in camp. And I think this past year, that really dropped a lot. I think it was only about 10 or 15 guys. And this year, it really was pretty much around 50 or more, even getting up there to the Canadian Football League. So it's all about exposure. It's all about opportunity, and we really try to, I really love being involved just to give a lot of these young men to really, go after their dream. Even if you don't make it or not, it's just you kind of have opportunity to go after your goal for us being a professional football player, and doing these All-Star games is just a step. So, I've been very fortunate to be able to be involved and really be able to give some guys, an opportunity. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing it, and I'll definitely keep people updated if there is an opportunity for us, the HBCU Bowl, to come back for this year.
Yeah, I hope it does come back because that's a game I really look forward to. And like you said, a lot of talent coming out of those games that went on to the next level. So hopefully that comes back. And, of course, we'll be following you with your Texas vs. Nation game and the roster watch list coming out. And then, of course, nationalunderclassmen.com. So follow him on Twitter, at Tabor Small. And, Tabor, hopefully we can get you on again, man. It's really been a pleasure talking, chatting it up NFL draft style with you.
Oh, thank you very much. I definitely appreciate you guys having me on. It was a lot of fun. And football season is all year round now, so it's exciting just to start on next year's, you know, draft class.
1,000%. That's Tabor Small, nationalunderclassmen.com, Texas vs. Nation game, HBCU Classic. Follow him on Twitter, at Tabor Small. And we will have him on again, hopefully. So appreciate your time today, Tabor, and I will definitely be in touch with you, my man.
Okay, thank you, guys. You guys have a good evening.
Thanks, Tabor.
All right, there you have it. Tabor Small doing a wonderful job breaking it down, Ralph. And, you know, I know he touched upon some of the quarterbacks that you had lined up for our Digging in the Crate segment as we carry on here on the Draft Digest Weekly Show with your host, Rick Saratella, Reverend Ralph Mancini. You were just listening to Tabor Small break it down quarterback style. So let's stick to the quarterbacks, Ralph. We mentioned Tyler Russell in the SEC from Mississippi State. I think he hit the nail on the head when you talk about a streaky quarterback, has his fair share of ups and downs. And, of course, Brian Renner from UNC over in the ACC, running that Larry Fedora, you know, spread offense over there. Any follow-up points you want to make about those two quarterbacks?
No, you know, as I mentioned before, Tyler Russell, to me, physically, he has those athletic tools that you look for. I really love the way he throws the ball. He's got that over-the-top motion. He can hit guys in stride. He's got nice touch on his throws. If he can work on his mechanics, and if he tries not to do too much sometimes when nothing is there, he's got to make better decisions. He's got to be more mature. But if he gets that down pat, I really love his upside. Renner is a smarter guy, or the guy who makes better decisions, the more experienced, the more polished quarterback is the best term, I think. Then if you talk about other quarterbacks maybe going outside the SEC and outside the ACC, somebody that I think has got tremendous ability is Casey Paulhall from TCU. He is a pure downfield thrower. He's not afraid of challenging defenses. He has the size at about 6'4", 225, and he's athletic as well. Much more athletically gifted, in my opinion, than Andy Dalton, his predecessor over at TCU.
Wow.
The problem with Paulhall is he was suspended for drug and alcohol issues last year. And we're not talking about pot, marijuana. We're talking about cocaine and ecstasy. I think he also has a DUI on his record. You know, those are serious issues. And this is a big year for him coming up because he's going to have to prove that he's, you know, past these problems that he's had. But from a technical standpoint, he has to work on his accuracy. He needs to get the ball out a little quicker on his short throws. I think the footwork, if he improves his footwork, I think that will improve his accuracy. But if he keeps his nose clean, I think Paulhall has got some real ability.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such a dilemma when you evaluate a quarterback. I mean, you talk about the skill set better than Andy Dalton, but then you factor in the off the field issues. I mean, where do you gauge his draft stock entering the 2013 season? Where do you see him now in terms of NFL draft projection? Where do you think, how high, you know, could he go if he does prove to, you know, keep his nose clean off the field and continue to succeed on the field?
Well, you know, if he were to come out right now with all his issues on the field, off the field, and you take into account his athletic ability, I think that, you know, he'd probably be a third-round pick, maybe a fourth-round pick. But if he makes those improvements that I just suggested, and, you know, he keeps his off-the-field stuff, you know, clean, and he keeps his, all, you know, his life clean and all of that, I think that he can meet, maybe even be a second-round pick. He has that type of ability, the size, the arm strength, and the athleticism to make plays outside the pocket. So I think he can be a second-round pick if everything goes according to plan.
All right. The good Reverend Ralph Mancini joining Rick Servitella here on the Draft Digest Weekly Show, digging in the crates, the Diamond Hunter Series, Offense Edition. And you talk about offense, a guy by the name of Cam Cameron, who you brought up earlier, Ralph, the new offensive coordinator down there at LSU. And let's face it, that backfield at LSU, we saw a couple underclassmen declare early, I think because of some of the running backs on the rise in LSU. And, of course, Jeremy Hill suspended, which means a bigger role for Kenny Hilliard and J.C. Copeland, another under-the-radar guy in the LSU backfield. What do you see their prospects for the upcoming NFL draft when you talk about Kenny Hilliard and J.C. Copeland?
Yeah, I like Hilliard. He took a backseat to Jeremy Hill last year, but he did have some impressive performances, especially over the past two seasons. He's a 240-pound back. He can lean on defenses, drive through defenders. But in addition to being a pile mover, he's got the quick feet that you like. He has the running instincts to jump cut to the perimeter for big yardage. I mean, he's not just a big guy. He's got some speed to him. He's got the ability to go and make plays on the perimeter. He's had 60 and 70-yard touchdown runs over the past two seasons. And what I really like about him as well is he's very good in pass protection. You know, we're talking about a running back that at the beginning of his college career was looked at as a fullback. So you know that he can block. And that's going to make a big difference for him as far as his draft stock is concerned. So I think he has the overall tools maybe to even be a Michael Turner type eventually. Then you mentioned J.C. Copeland. I mean, you talked about big, a converted defensive tackle, 6'1", 280 pounds.
Wow.
He routinely drives defenders back 10, 15 yards, or he often completely just turns them out of the running back's path. He's a flat-out finisher. He needs more discipline in his game. He's got to cut down on the penalties. But, I mean, you're talking about a player that, you know, if you take him, and let's face it, he's a fullback, so he's probably not going to be drafted until maybe like the fourth or fifth round. But if you take a player like this, I mean, he could improve an entire running attack just by himself as a lead blocker. So, you know, I really like J.C. Copeland. Huge, just a huge individual.
So what you're trying to say in short is that J.C. Copeland is a better prospect than my guy, what's the kid that went to the Chargers? Hester, Jacob Hester. He's a high-ranked prospect.
I don't know what Jacob Hester is. It's they tried to put him at fullback, but he doesn't look like a fullback to me. He's one of those tweener guys. You know, I don't know what to make of Jacob Hester.
Yeah, kind of like a Brian Leonard falling through the cracks there, but keeping it in the backfield. There's a guy over in Auburn keeping the tradition alive. We saw Ontario McCaleb, a guy that impressed through the All-Star circuit and undrafted, but, picked up by the Bengals. They're going to convert him to cornerback. But Trey Mason keeping the tradition alive over at Auburn in terms of practicing his quickness by catching squirrels. That Ontario McCaleb started that tradition. Now Trey Mason keeping that tradition alive and also keeping the tradition alive of being a versatile running back. So what do you see his prospects for the upcoming season?
Well, you know, Mason, you know, he only really performed in a few games, but what he showed last year was very impressive. Quick-cutting running back. He's got the quick feet. He runs very low to the ground. He's not big, but he's shifty. And I think his best trait is just making people miss. He's a darn good pass catcher as well. He's got to improve his blocking and his blitz pickup. So I think that, you know, if he improves in those areas of the game, if he shows the ability to stay healthy and be a workhorse, because he's not a very big guy, I think that, you know, he might be a solid mid-round type of back, you know, somewhere in the late third round, maybe fourth round. I could see him definitely going, you know, in that part of the draft.
The good Reverend Ralph Mancini breaking it down, diamonds in the rough, looking ahead to 2014 NFL draft. We've been talking, you know, big-time conference football prospects. Let's delve into the smaller schools, Ralph, and a couple running back prospects. First off, Isaiah Crowell, big-time playmaker from University of Georgia, bursted onto the scene as a true freshman, making some noise for the Bulldogs. Unfortunately, had some, you know, another one of these players that had some off-the-field issues, handgun charges and all that, transferred to Alabama State, where he'll be the featured runner this year. And, of course, Marcus Coker from Stony Brook, the Iowa transfer, backed up Miguel Masonette this past season, but a guy who's going to assume the feature back a role this year for the Stony Brook Seawolves. So when we break down Isaiah Crowell and Marcus Coker, two guys that were Division One, you know, main, you know, heavy hitter conference prospects, now playing for smaller schools. Break down these guys in terms of what we can expect for the 2014 NFL draft. Are these guys draftable?
Oh, I think Crowell is definitely draftable. I think he's an elite talent. You're talking about a big, sturdy back with breakaway speed. He looks for contact. He's got good balance. He stays on his feet. He grinds out yardage. You know, he was dismissed from Georgia, and, you know, he needed some time to really acclimate himself at Alabama State this past year, but he still averaged 5.3 yards per carry. He's in better condition now than he was last year. You're hearing that he's more mature. He's leaner. He's faster. He's stronger this year. And he's going to get more carries. So, to me, he has the potential to be one of the top running backs in the nation. As far as Marcus Coker goes, he's not a speed back, but he's a punishing physical running back. He's got a devastating stiff arm. He's hard to bring down. And he's a smart, very smart kid, physics major. He's a film room junkie. To me, I think he projects as more probably like a goal line, a short yardage type of back at the next level.
Yeah, and he gained 1,000 yards as a backup to Masonette this past year. So Stony Brook getting their university out there on the NFL draft radar. Let's transition over to wideouts, Ralph, where there's a couple guys flying under the radar. You know, if you listen to our first podcast and you heard about guys like, you know, Sammy Watkins and Brandon Coleman and Marquise Lee. But how about some of these second-tier wideouts for the 2014 NFL draft? Let's start off with Jared Aberderis. He nearly declared this past year for the NFL draft. Was that a smart move on his behalf?
It could have been a good move just because the wide receiver position was so deep this past year. I don't think it's going to hurt him if he stays healthy. Aberderis is a former high school quarterback. He's a deep threat, and he could be a deep threat. He could be a possession receiver, and he's also a return man for Wisconsin. He's 6 foot two. He is your classic field stretcher. He uses his long arms to adjust the fourth rows. He rarely drops passes that he should catch. He's a very fluid runner, a long strider, makes everything look easy, and he has already been compared to Jordy Nelson. So I think you're looking at that type of upside. That's how good he can be. And let's face it, he didn't play with any good quarterback. I mean, outside of, you know, Russell Wilson, I mean, this past season, he didn't play with any good quarterbacks. If you watch film on him, I mean, a lot of those balls, a lot of those big plays that he made, they were like on underthrown balls where he had to turn back and he had to adjust and contort his body to bring those balls in. So just imagine what he can do with better quarterback play. So to me, Jared Aberderis, he's a real stud.
Yeah, big-time playmaker. And LSU has had their fair share of playmakers at the collegiate level. But
The LSU Tigers, you know, when they get to the NFL, they really haven't been, you know, they really haven't lived up to the hype. Now you talk about a kid like Odell Beckham. A lot of people talking he could be a top 50 overall selection in the 2014 NFL draft. What's your take?
Well, you know, he's a run-after-the-catch type of weapon. He's a precision route runner. He's got superior change of direction skills with the ball in his hands. And, you know, he might be listed at about 5'11", so he doesn't have great size, but he's got great leaping ability. In fact, you know, his first love is basketball, and he reportedly has a 40-inch vertical, and obviously, you know, that's going to be confirmed during the upcoming combine. But, you know, you're talking about somebody who does have, you know, good hands, although he does have some concentration lapses from time to time. So, you know, he's got an opportunity to improve, not to make some of those unsightly drops that he's made this past season. But he is a player that he has a lot of what you're looking for in terms of a possession receiver, a slot guy. Odell Beckham could be that type of receiver at the next level.
And we shall see if he lives up to the hype. And one guy that has a lot of hype surrounding him as we transition over to some Big East football, or should I say the All-American Football Conference, Devin Street, the Pitt Panthers, Ralph, surprisingly, they haven't had an NFL draft selection over the past 2 years. Two drafts have passed us by without a player from the University of Pittsburgh. Could Devin Street possibly break the streak?
Well, you know, Devin Street is another one of these receivers who has suffered from poor quarterback play. I mean, let's face it, Tito Sunseri is probably one of the worst quarterbacks that I've seen in college football over the past couple of years. And but, you know, Devin Street has made the best out of it. You're talking about a player who's got good height at about 6'3", 6'4". He has great agility, toughness, body control. He comes down with tough catches with defenders draped all over him. He does need to get a little bit stronger. He's got to do a better job of beating the jam off the line of scrimmage. But I think that he's definitely somebody that, I mean, right now, if I had to project him, he's somebody that, you know, you'd probably take in the later rounds, somebody you can develop. If he gets into the weight room and packs on some muscle, I think he is a player that could be a big play threat or ideally a good number two receiver in the NFL.
All right. Well, hopefully we will see a Pittsburgh Panther selected. I thought Ray Graham might be taken this past year, but 2 years in a row without a Panther selected. Devin Street definitely on the NFL radar. As we wrap up our offensive edition of the Diamond Hunter series, I know we talked about Brian Renner earlier in the show, Ralph, but what about one of his big play targets there at the tight end position? Big, tall, red zone weapon in Eric Ebron. What do you like about this kid?
I like the fact that he's a downfield threat. He could be split out wide. He hits the deep seams. He had a breakout season in 2012. He became much more confident in his route running, and he made some very acrobatic catches as well. He needs to show better ball security, and he's got to stop jumping off sides. He's still a little raw, you know, but you're talking about somebody, when you're talking about overall physical attributes and ability, to me he resembles Jared Cook in his receiving ability. But what he has over Jared Cook is he can actually block. Over at North Carolina, you know, they asked him to block in the trenches, and he also played some snaps at defensive end. So he's a tough kid. You know, overall, you're looking at somebody with speed and the grace and the agility of a big wide receiver, 6'4", 235 pounds. I really like Eric Ebron. And I'll just add in one more guy, C.J. Fedorowicz out of Iowa, a huge individual at 6'7", 265 pounds, a tremendous blocker. He catches everything in his hands, and he runs very physical routes. So those are two tight ends that I'm very excited about.
All right, well, there you have it. That was our
Diamond Hunter series, breaking it down to good Reverend Ralph Mancini on the offensive edition. He'll be back at it again with the defensive edition. And, Ralph, how about a parting shot? Anything that you got, you know, simmering on the hot stove, some things that some of our listeners could look forward to before we sign off here? It's been a power of hour, hour of power.
Yeah, well, you know, if the fans just want to follow me, I'm at Reverend Ralph on Twitter, and I talk about football 24/7, 365 days a year. I don't talk about the Knicks. I don't talk about the Mets. All I talk about is football.
Thank
so if
God.
You're a diehard football fan, then just give me a follow, and, you know, maybe we can have some great discussions over on Twitter.
At Reverend Ralph, and of course, he'll be featured on our new website over at NFLDraftBible.com, hosted on the Fantasy, actually Fanverse Fan Network. So look out for our great content there. Of course, if you're not subscribed to the NFL Draft Bible All Access, you can log on to NFLDraftBible.com. We just sent out our third email subscriber insider update. Today, you can get to all the NFL draft recap analysis, rookie fantasy football rankings, of course, the good Reverend Ralph Mancini breaking that down along with Joe Everett over at rookiedraft.com. I was your host, Rick Saratella. Before we let you go, just want to remind everybody to check out myfantasyleague.com, myfantasyleague.com for all your fantasy football website hosting solutions, of course. We're doing a local promo. We're excited about having Trattoria Rustica on board over in New Jersey, down in Montclair, 519 Bloomfield Avenue. If you go down there, tell them Rick sent you. You get 15% off your dinner. Definitely well worth the experience. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at NFL Draft Bible, where we'll be breaking it all down, counting you down to the 2014 NFL Draft, 338 days away. But who's really keeping track? For another edition, I was your host, Rick Saratella. Of course, I was joined by the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. Special thanks to Tabor Small for hopping on board. We're hoping to have him on board again. He did a wonderful job for us. And, of course, we'll be breaking it all down for you. Can't stop, won't stop. It's another edition. It's been a pleasure. And until next week, we'll be back at it again with another edition of the Draft Digest Weekly Show. I was your host, Rick Saratella, for the good Reverend Ralph Mancini, and of course, our special guest, Tabor Small. We'll catch you next time.